Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, it's Friday. Welcome to Baseball Central, everybody. I'm Jeff Blair. That is Kevin Barker.
Good to be here.
Good to have you here, man.
Thanks. Going outside. We're good.
Got a crap load to talk about today.
We do. Busy day.
Jays lost to the Astros 6-4 last night. Ari Dickey hurt by the long ball. And Colby Rasmus, 3 hits. Colby Rasmus looked really good.
Good for him.
You know why he does. We're going to talk about that in a minute. You know why he looked so good. And we'll get you set for this 3-game series between the Jays and the Orioles tonight in Baltimore. It's a big start for Dustin McGowan. Kevin and I.
Huge.
We'll talk about that. But right now, Kevin, I want to focus on Ari Dickey and in a start last night. Now, look, I think you take what you can get from a knuckleball pitcher. And I don't think you can win in the American League East with a knuckleball pitcher as your ace. I look at Ari Dickey as a guy who's going to give me 200 innings. Mm-hmm. On some days, he's going to lock the other team down. And I'm not going to, 2 runs is going to be enough. On other days, they're going to hit him, and I'm going to need to score 8 runs. And I wanted to ask you, as a guy who's played, you know, John Gibbons changed his rotation to get Ari Dickey in the position where he was going to be pitching indoors. He wasn't going to have to face Baltimore, pitching indoors, chance to sweep a series, all that good stuff. I'm a believer that teams in the field sort of follow the lead of what the pitcher does. The pitcher sets a tone for the game. As a player, would you find it hard to be on a team that relied on a knuckleball guy? You know, like Tim Wakefield, was it the Red Sox, he helped, but I mean, it wasn't live or die with Tim Wakefield, right? Sure. They had other guys. But for the Jays, it's pretty apparent that Ari Dickey, he's their guy right now. Can you win with a guy like that?
Well, I'm not sure. Well, if you look at last night's game, I think the first 3 innings, his knuckleball was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was like, just to give you a little example on how hard that thing is to hit, just imagine taking a wiffle ball outside in a windstorm, having somebody throw that thing at you and trying to hit it. First 3 innings, that's the way he looked. And then he gets to 3-0 on Grossman.
Mm-hmm.
And most big league hitters never swing 3-0.
He gets a green light.
He's throwing a 3-0 get-me-over knuckle and gives up a 2-run homer.
Mm.
It's the home run seems to just jump up and bite him. Base hits after base hits really doesn't seem to bother him too much. Guys on base, the walk every once in a while, it's the home run that really gets, it's that one pitch and that you can't let hurt you as seemed to be hurting him. So it's, me personally, I've always said it's going to be real tough for the Jays to compete and win the East with your ace as a knuckleball guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, as you said, it's the American League East is like no other division.
And Steve Sparks, the Houston Astros radio analyst, former major league pitcher, former knuckleball pitcher. As a matter of fact, he threw batting practice yesterday for the Astros because you're facing a knuckleball guy. You got to find somebody who can throw a knuckleball. He made the point a couple of days ago when I was talking to him about Ari Dickey's knuckleball and the difference in knuckleballs and how Ari Dickey's knuckleball is harder and all this. But he said the one thing that holds true with every knuckleball pitcher, he said, for some reason people have this idea that if you hit a knuckleball well, it's just going to kind of float and die. He said, there's no backspin on a knuckleball.
It's done.
And he said, when you're facing a guy throwing a fastball and you swing the bat and you make contact, what you're doing essentially is trying to reverse backspin, which happens, but he said it's a lot harder to do that than just hit a ball where there's no backspin. He was making the point that he thought one of the problems with Ari Dickey was that he was, and because he threw a little harder knuckleball, he said, I think Ari Dickey's exactly the type of knuckleball pitcher who, as he gets older, is going to give up a lot of home runs.
Sure. Well, it's... His knuckleball, you can see through the league starting from the first of this year, Tampa Bay, they swing early.
Yeah.
They want to get it before he throws the real hard one, exactly. Before it gets to the yo-yo one that moves both directions, up, in, out, down, around, because you can't hit it. It's obviously that's the one he wants to get people out on. So it's it's going to be real hard, and it's going to be a test for him to eating up innings is not a problem. He's going to go 7-8.
They're not going to be pretty a lot of the time.
Sure they're not. He's going to walk a couple of guys, which is, you know, to be accepted just because it's that thing moves all over the place. And it's just real for him to go and try to base that off of somebody else that throws a knuckleball, or to help him, you know, get better at throwing it, or mm-hmm. get better at not walking people, or get better at just the basic thing of throwing a knuckleball. Well, there's, as far as I know, he's the only guy on the show that does it.
Yeah, again, this isn't to say that, I'm not saying that, my God, R.A. Dickey's a waste or anything like that.
He saves bullpens for sure.
Sure. But there's a different mindset. It's a lot different than having Roy Halladay as your shutdown guy, I guess is what I'm saying.
There's not too many Roy Halladays.
Yeah. Or even a healthy Brandon Moore as your shutdown guy. But anyhow, R.A. Dickey, he got some pitches up. And you're right, against Tampa was
aggressive.
They were aggressive.
Very.
And his next start, they changed it up a bit. They started throwing the harder fastball earlier in the count.
And more fastballs.
Yeah. And last night, I didn't get a chance to interview R.A. Dickey, but I thought after the third inning, they were a little in between at times.
Well, really, he pitched really good. He made two bad pitches, the 3-0 pitch, and then the 3-0 home run in the seventh inning.
Right.
To Villar he left up and he hit out. It's without those two pitches, he's either tied or winning. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he had a horrible game and we can sit here and he walked all these people and he didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. No,
he didn't give up a lot of hits and he wasn't hit that hard. He just gave up two hits with guys on base.
Right. And that's the nature of a knuckleball pitcher.
Sure.
Colby Rasmus got three hits last night.
Good for him.
Home run. I'm watching the game, and he looked different at the plate to me.
Comfortable.
I was right, though. He was doing something different, wasn't
confident.
He?
Confident. Yeah, he's a guy with – we talked about Cabrera that had easy, no park swing, see the ball, hit the ball, simple. Colby's different. Mm-hmm. Colby has parts to his swing that have to be on time. If it's a little late, if it's a little early, he's pulling the breaking ball, killing people in the stands, or he's real late on the fastball and losing a lot of balls that way. Last night, you saw the effects of it. Leg kicks are real big. When guys hit home runs with leg kicks, it's a real power stance, which means when I get the leg kick, that automatically makes me have a little loop in my swing, which means if I get the head out and I hit that ball just right, exactly what Colby does. He hits the ball in the third, second. He's killing people in that deck out there.
It's funny because I'm wondering if maybe Colby isn't one of these guys. And Kevin, I mean, you've seen them. Everybody talks about, well, I like to have a consistent approach and I like mm-hmm. to have the same swing. But, you know, there are some guys, Kevin, who've got to change.
Sure.
At some point in the season. They mm-hmm. experiment with them. Moises Alou, I mean, I hate to always refer to the Expos. Moises Alou, I mean, you'd watch him at times and you go, where the hell did that come from? Well,
Whatever's working.
Something didn't feel right, so he did it.
Right.
Goes into a bit of a funk. He goes back to doing the thing that he was doing before when it mm-hmm. when it wasn't working. But guess what? Now all of a sudden it's working. And he used to make the point. You know, yeah, he said, there are parts of my swing that I don't mm-hmm. fool around with.
Sure. Well,
but there are other things that I need to do to be comfortable and to take advantage of what's working for me that day, essentially.
Exactly. Well, it gets back to that thing. You have to swing at good pitches. It doesn't matter how your swing is. It doesn't matter if you're getting your foot down, if you're late, if you're early. If you don't see the ball and you're not getting a good pitch to hit, you're not going to hit the ball hard. Mm-hmm. So he got a couple of good pitches to hit last night, and he put real good swings on them. And hopefully that can keep him going because he's a streaky hitter. He's mm-hmm. not going to hit 330 and hit you 40 home runs. He may hit you 40 home runs, and he may hit 230.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what you're getting from Colby. That's the way his swing and his makeup is. That's just the way it is.
And what I liked last night about Colby, when Colby's on, and we've seen this, when he's on, that pitch that
middle low,
and he hits that.
In the third deck.
Yeah, when he's on, that's his pitch. And he got that last night.
He hits it further than anybody in the big leagues. It's crazy.
It is. And if you look at the length of his some of the home runs he's hit.
Crazy.
But it's like that's the one area, right, where he's going to get a hold of it.
And well, yeah, he's lefty. Most lefties like the ball down and in.
Because
they have a little natural uppercut in their swing.
Right.
And with him having the leg kick, if he's just a tick late, he has to catch up some way to do that. How do you catch up? You speed your hands up to try to catch up. They got one way to go. Bad head goes down.
Yep.
And then he has a little loop. And hopefully he catches that ball out front and doesn't catch it a little late. If he catches it late, it's that lazy fly ball to left, or he's hitting it, you know, in the stands to behind the home plate.
Back in the press box.
Exactly. So good for him. He looked a lot better, and he looked confident. I saw him actually smiling in the dugout last night, which was...
Yeah, he didn't have that sort of confused Colby look you sometimes get. It's Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And on Sportsnet 1, Dan Connolly of the Baltimore Sun will join us in a few minutes. We'll get you set for the three-game series. Jays and Orioles tonight at Camden Yards. And the Jays starting a nine-game 10-day road trip or 10-game 11-day road trip. It's a long road trip, put it that way.
Nine and ten.
It's a long road trip to go on to Minnesota and Cleveland. Now, Kevin, Colby Rasmus has a good night at the plate.
Sure.
Brett Laurie, I thought on Wednesday, I've seen a lot of Brett Laurie's at bats. I thought on Wednesday, all right, I'm starting to see some signs. This is what I see from Brett Laurie when he looks like he's starting to get it. Last night, he looked like he didn't want to swing the bat.
He looked confused a little. It gets back to the old thing again. You have to swing at good pitches, and it looks like he's real timid. Normally, in the big leagues, you're going to get one good pitch to hit. And normally, that's center cut. Either that means they're going to get me over breaking ball early in the count, which would normally be just to get me over strike one pitch.
Sure.
Or you're going to get that middle of the row 1-1 fastball, that center cut. It's either a little up or, you know, you can put a real good swing on it. He just seems like he's real timid and doesn't want to swing at that pitch. Whether that be he's thinking too much, he's thinking about, and that's normally what happens when you're struggling. You're thinking about getting your foot down, or I need to get my hands back on time, or I need to keep my head down on the ball, or it escalates when you, because everybody's creature's a habit. They want to look up at the board and see that I'm hitting 330. Well, not everybody can hit 330. And then when you look up there and it says you're hitting a buck 10 or a buck 20, it's real hard to get your foot down on time and swing at fastballs when you should. And so I think he just needs to step back and try to simplify this as much as he can, which, whether that be don't take batting practice for a day and go to the game that way, or just do weird things that could help you get in a groove.
Mm-hmm.
And it is weird. Baseball's a weird game. It's hitting a baseball is the hardest thing to do in sports. If anybody that ever says otherwise has never done it, especially at that level.
It's interesting. We're talking about Brett Laurie, by the way. We've got a segment every Friday called the Home Hardware Ask the Experts segment. Guess what that means? You're our expert. I got to ask you a question.
Good for me.
Just for you.
That's awesome.
And actually, the question comes from Jen Herbs. She wants to know, what can Brett Laurie do to improve his batting performance this season? Now, you touched on that. You talked about change something up. What worked for you as a hitter?
Sure.
When you're in one of those funks. I'm one of these people. I talking to Joe Siddle about this yesterday. Early in the season, I don't believe guys are in a slump. Early in the season, you're in a funk. I use the word funk.
Sure.
What worked for you?
Well, it could be anything. Like I said earlier, it could be not taking batting practice. It could be using somebody else's bat. It's just little simple things that would make something feel different.
Because you got to think by now, he's fiddled around with this and watched video coming out of the yin-yang.
Exactly. And that's a bad thing. You can watch. It's not because you can't hit. It's because you're slumping. It's something that's made you get into a little bit of funk of taking pitches, or You could go up tonight and say, I'm going to go up and swing at only fastballs. I'm going to look one fastball, one spot, whether that be away. If I go up, I'm looking away. He throws me three fastballs in. I tip my hat and I say, good job.
Mm-hmm.
He throws me that one fastball away. I jump all over it. It could be just little simple things because he's a tick late. And when you're a tick late, that means you're thinking too much. That means you're thinking about, I need to get my foot on the ground. I need to get the bad head out in front of the plate. Because you can tell he's late, and you can tell when he swings at one or even he takes a strike, he's thinking about mm-hmm. it. He steps out, and he's thinking about it. Because first of all, he doesn't think they're strikes, because you see him a lot turn around at the umpire, and that's what you get when you're struggling. You want help. And it seems like every time, before you even walk to the plate, it's 0-2. So he just needs to try to simplify it as much as possible, make it easy, get your foot down, get the bad head out in front of the plate, swing at strikes. It's simple to say, but it's real hard to do when you're, 4 for 37? It's real hard to do when you're that way.
And the other thing too, Kevin, is it's early in the season, right? So you don't have that, you can't say, I'm scuffling right now, but hey, I was 20 for 53 a couple of months ago, so I know I can do it. Right now, if you're Brett Lurie, you're thinking, God, I think the last time I got a hit was on September 14th. I mean, that's what you're thinking, or
that's how
spring
it feels.
Training.
Yeah, he needs like a broken bat single over the second baseman's head, or something weird like that, a swinging bunt, just something that gives him a little bit of confidence, and he needs it early, which means he needs it his first at bat, his second at bat. That way he's not taking this to the field and he has to think about it, that he's 0-for-1 and now I need to get a hit my next at bat to go 1-for-2. Because players, when they're struggling, think about all this.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to go 0-for-2 and then have to try to get a hit and go 1-for-3. So he needs to try to simplify it. Yes, it is early in the season, but you don't want this thing to get so out of control that, middle of May and he's 10-for-80.
Yeah.
And then it's super, super hard to get out of it. So,
and at that point, people are taking, it's not in your hands. At that point, manager's saying,
exactly,
you're not playing tonight.
We're talking a whole different ball game then.
Exactly. As we said, the Baltimore Orioles, but by the way, I'm just to remind you, the Ask the Experts segment, you can submit your home hardware Ask the Expert questions to sportsnet.ca/experts. And one of our experts will answer it. In other words, it means I won't answer it. Whoever's in here will answer it, and we'll deal with the question. We'll deal with the question every Friday. What we want to deal with right now is the Baltimore Orioles. The Jays start a 3-game series against the Orioles tonight at Camden Yards. I don't think if you're the Jays or a Jays fan or anybody, even people who are optimistic about where the Jays may finish this year. I don't think you can talk about competing with Tampa or Boston or New York. You've got to look first and foremost at the Baltimore Orioles, a team with a terrifically deep lineup, a team that's just beaten the Yankees in a series using a late rally for a 5-4 win. Dan Connolly is the baseball columnist, the national baseball writer with the Baltimore Sun, and he joins us on Baseball Central. Dan, welcome to our show. Say hello to Mr. Kevin Barker over here.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Dan, how's it going?
You spend all this time with Jeff. I know it's got to be a difficult situation for you.
Yeah, it's not too easy.
You, my friend, are a dick.
See, he can say that. I can't.
I've known Dan for a long time.
Yeah.
And Dan knows, anyhow. Yeah, you know what? You're the guy that I shouldn't be criticizing based on some of the situations we've been in. So I think we'll just move on, and I'll do this again.
Let's talk baseball, sure.
Yeah, why don't we do that? I mean, who among us, right, Dan?
Right.
So the Orioles now. I was making this point. The Orioles in this city, the only reason people didn't pick the Jays to finish in last place is a lot of people put the Orioles last place. I think there's a tendency in this city to underestimate what the Orioles are about and to underestimate how good they can be. What is the biggest difference from this Orioles team compared to last Orioles team, last year's Orioles team? And what has to happen for this team to get back to the playoffs, Dan?
Well, Well, they need, their starting pitching needs to pitch. I mean, they need to pitch well. And that's really the only difference. I mean, you know, a lot of, it's not just in Toronto. A lot of national people, well, I mean, there are some, Tyler Kepner from the New York Times of the Orioles going to the World Series. But for the most part, people are kind of, have kind of just swept them by the wayside, simply because Tampa's pitching so good, Boston's the defending champions, and no one's expecting the Yankees 2 years in a row to lay an egg. But this Orioles team's pretty good. As you said, their offense is among the best in baseball. And their bullpen's pretty solid. They got a lot of different looks in there. The thing is whether their rotation is going to pitch well. And, I mean, they like to think so. They went out and they spent a lot of money, 4 years, $50 million, the most ever given to a Orioles free agent pitcher, Ubaldo Jimenez. And, you know, and right now the rotation is basically what it was last year. Chris Tillman's pitching great, and everybody else isn't. They have a 6.06 ERA in their first nine games, and opposing hitters are hitting 3.41 against them. So, obviously, that's got to change. They got to pitch deeper into games. They think they have a group that can do so, you know, with Tillman, who's really emerging as an ace now, and then, you know, Jimenez, and then Chen and Gonzalez are both healthy, so they feel like they got something there, and they'll get a full season out of Bud Norris. But it's not a rotation that scares you, and right now that's the Achilles heel.
Hey Dan, speaking of their bullpen, how important has Tommy Hunter been solidifying the closer role?
Yeah, it's early, obviously, but he's 3-for-3 in save opportunities. All three were you know, big boy saves. I mean, mm-hmm. He did it in a one-run game against the Boston Red Sox on opening day. Then he had a man on second, came into a situation, needed two outs against Detroit with some of their better hitters up and got them out of the way. And then on Wednesday, it was a two-run game, but he still had to go against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, gave up one run but got out of it on a double play. So he's been tremendously big, and that's the thing. They needed somebody to fill that closer's role. They had Jim Johnson. They didn't want to spend $10 million a year on Jim Johnson. They wanted to spend that, allocate that, those funds elsewhere. So it was really incumbent upon someone, and specifically Hunter, to step up in the back end of the bullpen. And so far, he's done that. And that's really big because they have guys like Darren O'Day and Brian Madison, Zach Britt. I mean, they have good arms down there, but they just needed one guy to step up and fill Johnson's shoes.
And Jim Johnson, of course, losing the closer's role in Oakland. So, I mean, I don't know. I know you don't necessarily take a lot of satisfaction out of somebody else's lack of performance, but I think in a lot of ways, Dan Duquette's probably looking at that and going, I may have made the right choice here.
Absolutely. I mean, the guy blew nine saves last year.
Right.
And in the last two seasons, he had 50-plus save seasons, and people, you know, look at that. But he blew nine saves last year. In many ball clubs, he would have been pulled in the middle of the season last year. But Buck Showalter is very, very loyal to those guys, and so he stuck with them. And he ended up getting out of it for the most part. But he obviously wasn't the same guy that he was in 2012. And they just didn't think spending that kind of money on a guy who blew nine saves, they figured we can probably blow nine saves for a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they went.
Sure. Dan, you speak a little bit about the depth of the lineup. How important is it to get Manny Bichardo back, not only at third, but to solidify that lineup? I think he may hit second. How important is that?
You know, offensively, it's somewhat important. He would probably be batting second, and that does, you know, make your lineup a little longer, a little deeper. But really, where they miss him is defensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is so good defensively, guys. Among the best that I've ever seen. And, you know, he won the Platinum Gold Glove this year as a 21-year-old. So to get him back defensively, then that kind of pushes everybody else to other spots. Right now, Ryan Flaherty's been playing mainly third base, or rookie Jonathan Scope has. Flaherty can go back to second. They can put Scope out in the minors if they want to, if you know, some of those other guys are hitting. Lombardozzi can kind of move around more as a utility guy. So it really, I mean, it just makes that left side of the infield so much better when both he and J.J. Hardy, who's missed five games with back spasms, when those two guys are in there, it's just such a really good team. And the pitchers can pitch a little bit more aggressively because they know that if the ball gets to that left side, chances are it's going to be scooped up.
Sure. What is the status of J.J. Hardy?
You know, he's hoping to be able to start in tonight's game against the Jays. You know, he's had these lower back spasms. He's had them in the past. They got worse, and now they seem to have gotten better. I have not talked to him, obviously, on the off day on Thursday. But his plan was to play on Friday. And then Machado is going to be out and probably they're saying, you know, late April, but he has not sprinted yet. So we're thinking sometime in May.
Dan Connolly of the Baltimore Sun joining Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on Baseball Central, brought to you by Home Hardware. I guess with Manny Machado out, the addition of Nelson Cruz's bat to this lineup has been pretty significant.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think anybody really knew exactly what you were going to get with Cruz based on the suspension last year and everything else, and obviously not a tremendous defensive player. But he can DH, you know, and play some left field. He's been okay. He's caught everything that's been hit to him in left field. It's not always pretty. But he really does give them just, I mean, unfortunately, it's not a different look. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a guy who strikes out a lot, who has a lot of power, who drives the ball. But to have another one of those guys in the lineup, you know, with Adam Jones and with Chris Davis and you know, just going the line, Matt Wieters and J.J. Hardy, I mean, guys who can really hit the long ball and you know, can blow open an inning. It's been big. And, you know, everybody else started out slow besides Wieters. And so Cruz was really the only guy that was really hitting for him. And, I mean, that kept him alive.
Do we panic yet about Chris Davis?
No, gosh, no. No, I mean, this guy's a real hitter. I mean, he's, you know, he obviously is not hitting a home run. He's not driving the ball, you know, the way he did. But I don't think that there's any real worries with him. You know, once the other guys start really falling in the line, he'll be getting more pitches to hit, I think.
What are you seeing from him that explains the drought? Now, I know he had four stretches of at least eight homerless games last year as well. So, I mean, it's not like people are gonna panic about it. But has he seen himself doing anything different? Is he being pitched any differently?
I think he's being pitched a little differently. I mean, you know, the guy, it's funny, you know, the worries about Chris Davis. He's batting 300 with, you know, with three doubles in the yeah. first nine games of the season. It's like, whoa, you know, he's already driven in six runs, the title among the team leaders in RBIs. But, I mean, you know, they're basically what he says is, and it happened the second half of last year, is that he's getting very few pitches to hit, and he's not, you know, jumping on, or he's not effectively hitting those mistakes or those pitches he needs to hit. And that's what he has to work his game on. Because before, the first half of last year, you know, people were just pitching to him and he was picking out his pitch and crushing it. Now it's a situation where he knows he's only getting one or two good pitches to hit and he needs to do something on them. He can't foul them off, you know. And at this point right now, he's not even trying. He's, you know, obviously trying to drive the ball, but he's not driving the ball particularly well. Because I think he's just trying to pick out that one pitch. I think, again, you know, like I said, the guy's got a 300 average right now. He's got 10 hits and 30 some at bats. So I don't think there's any real concern. You know, when you get back to Baltimore and it starts getting hot and everything else, I think the home runs will come. The other thing, too, guys, I mean, they have faced some pretty good pitchers. I mean, they face the Tigers, the Red Sox, and the Yankees. You know, it's three pretty good staffs there. They really have, I mean, except for maybe Ivan Nova, they really haven't had a guy who is not considered a top-of-the-line pitcher that they faced. So I think that might be a little bit of it, too.
Dan, let me ask you one more quick question about the pitching staff. Geraldo Jimenez, I know, has had maybe an off one or two years the last couple of years. How does he fit in that rotation in Baltimore?
Well, I mean, you know, as I said, they gave him a four-year, $50 million deal. And the Orioles had never given a deal beyond 3 years to a free agent pitcher in their history. They really expect a lot from this guy. And, I mean, and the thing is that when he's on, he's as good as they come. And when he's not, he's really bad. And, I mean, and that's the thing that they, ever since 2010 in Colorado, he's not been able to put together a consistent season. And, you know, 11 and 12 weren't particularly good, and then the first half of 2013 was not particularly good in Cleveland, and then he was tremendous in the second half. Kershaw was the only pitcher better in September right. than Jimenez. So, I mean, you know, they expect a lot from him. I mean, he's only 30 years old. Mm-hmm. He is a veteran. He's been around for a long time. This is his ninth season in the majors. So they're expecting him to, if not be the ace, be that number two guy to kind of take some pressure off of Chris Tillman.
Right.
Dan, listen, it was good of you to join us today. Thanks so much. Be well, and everything's right. Everything's good with the family and everything?
Everything's great. And you guys, are the girls still swimming and doing well?
Still playing water polo, all sorts of stuff.
All right.
Thanks, Dan.
Take care, Dan. That is Dan Connolly of the Baltimore Sun.
It's what you get for hitting 50 home runs. That's why we were asking about Chris Davis.
Going eight game.
When you haven't hit a home run, you hit 50 homerless the year before, you may want to.
Yeah, no one points out the batting average or the doubles.
Nobody cares.
And we appreciate Dan Connolly joining us, by the way. Dan Connolly, a very good traveling companion. And yeah, just hoping that he never does write the book that he says he's going to write. If it does, in trouble. Got a lot to talk about around Major League Baseball. I want to talk about this whole thing about whether or not you're supposed to slide headfirst into first base. A couple of guys have been seriously hurt. I was always taught you didn't do it, and apparently Harold Reynolds is instructing young kids to slide headfirst into first base. We'll talk to Kevin about that, and also want to talk a little bit about Michael Pineda and the pine tar on his hand. It's been a long time since we've had anybody sit in the studio talk about pine tar pitching in the Red Sox. Kevin Barker and I will deal with it. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Prizes like no other from a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Central. It is the stretch drive, the ninth inning, whatever you want to call it, up to Hockey Central. And Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker and Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet were brought to you by our very, very, very good friends at Home Hardware. And again, if you want to get in the Ask the Experts segment of this show, which actually is now being called Ask Whoever's Sitting Beside Jeff, I'll give you the information in a minute here as soon as I put my reading glasses on. You can submit your Home Hardware Ask the Person Sitting Beside Jeff Blair in the Studio questions to sportsnet.ca/experts, and we will see to it that the experts, in fact, do get to answer the questions. A couple of things we want to talk about with Kevin Barker. I was always told, same thing you were told, you don't slide into first base. You run all the way through the bag. Sure. You don't slide into first base. You damn sure don't slide in head. Well, I was going to say it's pretty hard to slide in otherwise, but you don't slide in head first. Josh Hamilton is out for 6 to 8 weeks with a thumb injury as a result of a headfirst slide into first. Or headfirst slide. Yasiel Puig, same thing. He's got a thumb injury, not as serious as Josh Hamilton's. Now, I know that last night on Baseball Tonight, they were talking about sliding into the bag and sliding into first base.
That it's faster.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. Or Harold Reynolds, who knows a bit about stealing bases, maintains it is. I'm reading a thing from, there's this TV show called Mythbusters. I don't know if anybody's seen Mythbusters. Mm-hmm. Well, they did a scientific study, and in fact, it is fast. It's better to slide into a bag, physically, in terms of physics. It's better to slide into a bag.
I think it's more of, you see people getting hurt because people just don't practice sliding into first base.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that you slide into second. And the main reason why that is because you want to stop on the base. You don't want to slide past the base
right,
or run past the base. First base is always different. And I think the two situations where the guys got hurt were balls that were hit to where they had to actually turn their body and look at the ball. And then they decided to slide, which either they slid a little too late, which would mean if you slide too late, you're going to slide mainly with your hands, and you can, what they did, they jammed their thumbs. It's real hard to run and look over your shoulder at whatever you're running towards. So if I'm running towards first and I'm trying to look at shortstop, that's really impossible.
Right.
And then you try to slide on top of that, I think is going to cause trouble. Now, whether that's faster, I never was fast enough that it mattered. I was always out by 3 or 4 or 5 steps, but if
or it was a double,
exactly right. Or I just, you know, doubles, I kind of eased into it like David Ortiz,
right?
You know, simple. But that's a play. If I was teaching my son, I would never say slide to first, because you're more apt to get hurt at first base than you would be at second, because you know you're sliding at second and you know you're going to slide at third. But there's that little chance at first that I don't know if I'm going to slide, but now I'm going to slide. That's how I think those two guys got hurt. Like I said, would I recommend it? Maybe not.
I remember being told, too, is when you get to first base, I mean, part of the reason you don't slide is you want to round the bag and you want to see what's going on.
Sure.
Because you might be able to go to second. If you slide and the ball goes down there.
Yeah. I've always said if it throws high, like if it takes the first baseman off the bag, he either has to jump and you can see that, then you slide to avoid a tag.
Sure.
But that play at first base is so bang-bang that how are you going to know? Most of the time, you don't even know that. It's a real close play most of the time, and it's real hard to decide. I'm running so hard that now I'm going to slide. That's the problem I think people have because they just don't practice sliding to first. And they look real awkward, like their body's all contortioned and their arms look like it's underneath the bag. And so, like I said, me personally, I never did it because, first of all, I didn't know how to slide head first. I would slide feet first.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always heard people sliding into home plate. Well, if I'm a catcher and I have a guy sliding head first, that's a fun way to smack somebody real good and that you don't like. So,
One of the other things I want to talk about last night as well, and this is kind of funny. There's a bit of a background here. You'll remember last year that couple of folks on this station. We had a bit of an issue at a game against the Boston Red Sox and Toronto Blue Jays. Much was made of the fact that Clay Buchholz appeared to be loading up the ball with pine tar, a mixture of dirt, pine tar, sweat. And, of course, the Red Sox, there was nothing there. And anyhow, it turned into a major situation. Fast forward to this year, last night, Michael Pineda's on the mound for the New York Yankees against the Boston Red Sox. Do we have the viz? We're getting the viz of this, and I'll explain it to you. Michael Pineda, and there's shots of him, the same thing when he pitched against Toronto. He's got pine tar dirt on the palm of his hand. He's got pine tar and dirt in the palm of his hand. Let's go to audio. This is Michael Pineda and Joe Girardi and John Farrell talking about this particular situation.
It's dirt.
Just dirt?
Yeah. And between the inning, I'm sweating too much, my head, and I'm putting dirt. Yeah, I'm grassing the dirt.
I became aware of it in the fourth inning through the video that some had seen. And then when he came back out for the fifth inning, it looked, based on what was told to me, where it was located, it looked like the palm of his right hand was clean. So that's the extent of it.
What I said is, I didn't see it on his hand, is what I said. And number two, I said, I don't really have anything to say about it. I don't.
There's that substance of Jerry.
And we should mention again, the Red Sox did not, I mean, they didn't, Brian O'Neill is the home plate umpire, very good umpire, and he said, no, the Red Sox didn't bring it up. I didn't notice it. The Red Sox didn't bring it up. It's pretty clear, by the way, I mean, if you were watching it in TV, you can see the pine tar, the kind of brownish-reddish substance in the first inning. You can also see that he doesn't have it on his hand in the fifth inning, and there was a couple of close-up shots about it. And a couple of the Red Sox players, David Ortiz, said, someone asked him about it. He said, look, I don't think that has anything to do with loading the ball or putting a different spin on it. I just think it's grip.
Sure.
Does that constitute cheating to you? I mean, if you're a hitter and you're out there, does that constitute cheating to you?
Me personally, I could care less. It's if that guy wants to put pine tar, they do it all the time. You see their hats when they go to grab their hat. It looks sticky and it looks white.
Right.
Is that cheating? Because if they're wearing a black hat, so to speak, and it's white in front, they always they're with their pitching hand, they're just getting grip on their hand. Now this is a little overboard, I think. It's that takes it to a whole different level. And then when he says it's dirt, hey, if you're gonna do it, maybe try to hide it just a little bit better than that. Mm-hmm. As much video as there is in the big leagues now. You should try to at least not cake it on your hand like that and then come out and say it's dirt. Dirt doesn't stick to your hand like that. We're not stupid people. We can figure out that that's not dirt.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do it, try to hide it a little bit more than he did, I think. And my old saying, if you can do it and
you get away with it.
Exactly right. Then it's It's not like it's making the ball do a lot more. Mm. Maybe it's grip. Maybe it makes the breaking ball move a little bit. Who knows? Maybe it's more of a mental thing, mm-hmm. that if I have it on my hand and I rub the ball up with it, I can throw this ball harder or make it move more. Now, whether it does or not, that's a question for somebody else, I think.
I want to talk about Dustin McGowan in a minute, but it very briefly, in like 30 seconds, I want to ask you this. You're standing at the plate. How do you know when a guy is what to you is cheating for a pitcher? How do you know when he's loading the ball? What's the sign that you
look I don't think you ever have. I've never seen anybody do this. I know a lot of pitchers that use pine tar and
or the bug spray, the stuff.
Yeah, right? I've never heard of the bug spray thing until I heard of the guy doing it and maybe in Houston, yeah. that was spraying the stuff, and they said, well, obviously that place is indoors, so yeah. it's not a whole lot of bugs.
It's not a whole lot of bugs
indoors.
There's
no bugs there. So I've personally never seen a guy doing that. Now, if you're obviously somehow rubbing that ball up, mm-hmm. scuffing it, maybe that would. But the umpire checks the ball a lot.
Yeah.
Like it's all a hitter has to do is turn around and say, check the ball for me.
You know, I've had guys tell me it's one thing. They'll draw the line. If a guy's doing something to help get his grip on the ball, okay. But when he's marking the ball or doing something that's affecting
sure,
the flight,
sure.
that's where you draw the line.
Yeah, whether the pine tar or the sticky stuff makes a big difference, I'm not real sure if it
right.
does or not. Maybe, like I said, grip and would keep you from chucking the ball in the fourth row, maybe. But other than that, I'm not real sure it helps any.
The Blue Jays play the Orioles tonight, first game of a three-game series. Dustin McGowan on the mound against Chris Tillman mm-hmm. for the Orioles. Big start for Dustin McGowan after what we saw the last time.
Huge. I think it's the biggest start he's had in a long time. I think he needs to – we have to see a real good outing from him, especially when they have J-Hap in the waiting days here. He's coming back soon. And
J-Hap, 4 2/3. Yesterday, 5 hits, 1 run, 6 Ks, 2 walks.
90 pitches, I see. So
63 Ks.
You yeah. have to he's going to have to bring it and bring it good tonight. So.
There was a lot of talk in his last start about him tipping pitches. What's going to be the sign – to you, Kevin Barker, first inning of tonight, what will show you that he is tipping or isn't tipping?
I don't think it matters. I think if his stuff's good, he's confident. He throws strikes. I think if you have good stuff, you throw strikes, you throw it where you want, you can tell him where it's coming. What I think.
As a hitter, did you like knowing
I did
location
not.
And pitch type?
I did not. Maybe location. Pitch it does. It's hard enough to hit a baseball anyway
mm-hmm.
at that amount of time. If you know... If I'm trying to get my foot down, keep my head down, get the bad head out in front of the plate, then I know what's coming and I know where they're throwing it. That's like,
that's two things you don't need to know.
That is all over the place. So like I said, I'm going to be looking tonight for him to be confident and just want the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that last time. That's what I'm going to be looking for, and I'm sure Baltimore's going to be looking for the same.
Yeah, and I've got to think that based on what we saw in that last start. John Gibbons and Pete Walker are going to be even more attentive and paying more attention to things like that. And again, it should be pointed out, guys do tip pitches. Sometimes they correct it. Sometimes it recurs. But in Dustin McGowan's defense, everybody agrees that whatever he was doing is something that he hasn't done before. So, you know, you'd like to think that maybe they'll be able to correct it. No idea if we're going to be back on Monday. We got that big Brandon Shanahan announcement in Toronto. But I know for certain we'll be back Tuesday. I know for certain the Jays and the Orioles are playing a three-game series in Baltimore tonight. You can catch the game starting tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And in Sportsnet, Kevin Barker, I know you'll be back on Tuesday.
Awesome.
All right. For Kevin Barker, this is Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us on Baseball Central. Brought to you by our very good friends at Home Hardware. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the baseball. Stay tuned for Hockey Central, because it's coming up next.